Tonight we are keeping on going in our survey of the Old Testament in terms of seeking to answer the question, what is the message of the Old Testament, especially as it is revealed through each single book? So we're asking the question of every book of the Old Testament, what is the message of this book? And we've come a long way, and we're getting closer and closer to completing this trek. So tonight we are in the book of Proverbs, and yet again, we're going to be asking the question, what is the message of this book? And there's a lot of stuff in Proverbs, of course, but it seems to me there is an overall message that resonates from the book. So we're going to get started with that right now. So we do know, hopefully you know, that the thematic material there has to do with wisdom. We're going to talk about that as we move forward. So Proverbs then is a book of wise sayings that comes to us from the days of Solomon to Hezekiah. The book mentions Solomon, who reigned 971 to 931 in the very first verse, but it also gives us proverbs that are attributed to those who are called the wise in chapter 22 and 23 and 24. Then there are other proverbs that are attributed to Agur and then Lemuel, and some that are just there. But that's what we have in the book. Along with Job and Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, and some of the Psalms, Proverbs constitutes the wisdom literature in the Bible, what we call wisdom literature. A key term in Proverbs is, of course, wisdom. And that's what we think about when we think about wisdom literature. The word of wisdom can have the nuance of skill, as it does in Exodus 28:3, being skillful, particularly in the skill of choosing the right course of action for the desired result. So one of the ways of what wisdom is not... Wisdom is this. Wisdom is knowing the best possible outcome and the best possible way to get to the best possible outcome. God is all wise. He knows where He's taking this world and He knows how to get it there. And so when we think about our own wisdom, even that is there's skill involved in knowing what is best and knowing how best to pursue this. So it takes place in a covenantal framework. That is the covenantal framework of God's covenant with Israel and God's eternal covenant with His people. So denoting really in terms of practical everyday living, what is the best way to live, or the art or the skill or art of godly living. Now, Proverbs base its instruction on the fear of the Lord. Chapter 1, verse 7. Wisdom, the fear of the Lord is wisdom. The beginning of wisdom and knowledge and all that stuff. It all begins with the fear of the Lord, the starting point of having real wisdom. And that the fear of the Lord uses the covenantal name of the Lord, or Yahweh, implying that its audience is the people of God. Nevertheless, Proverbs is not all the same as the law. It's not at all the same as the law or the prophets. The difference is one of emphasis rather than basic orientation. So, you know, we've been going through on Sunday mornings Exodus and looking at the law, looking at the Ten Commandments the last couple of Sundays. And we've talked about the law and its instruction about the law from the New Testament to help us even understand what it is we're covering there. When we look at Proverbs, we're not looking at law. But there is an integration with God's law for God's people. The law and the prophets lay their stress on covenant people as a whole, called to show the world what restored humanity can be. But Proverbs focuses on what such restoration would look like in day-to-day behavior and in personal character of the people who trust God, follow Him, worship Him. So that's what I'm going to give you by way of introduction. Now I just want you to see the basic. There's a structure to the book. Let me put it in three parts. First part being the title and the purpose, chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. We're going to cover that just a little bit. And then the value of wisdom is covered in chapter 1, verse 7 through chapter 9. So that's almost, you know, almost all but the first seven verses of chapter 1 all the way to chapter 9. And then the third part are just these collection of wise sayings. And some of them are almost like, you know, independent of one another, one line. Some of them go for several verses. And then I think one of the longest parts in that third portion is the section in Proverbs 31, which speaks of a godly woman. So we're going to start off, we're going to move through these divisions. So we're starting off with this first division, title and purpose. And we're going to look at chapter 1, verses 1 through 7 at the title and purpose. Now, as I've been doing lately, I don't have a whole, I took out a lot of the verses written down from your study sheets there because, it just takes up way too much space and it's like reprinting the Bible by the time we're through. So that's why you have one that you can carry. But we'll look at it up here on the overhead, on the projector. So we're reading, this is Proverbs 1, 1 through 7. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing and righteousness, justice and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So that's basically the introduction to Proverbs. And it tells us a lot about what they're intended for and what they are. The purposes of the Proverbs include the following, as we've seen. To gain wisdom, to learn how to deal wisely, fairly, justly, and rightly in the world. To give prudence to the simple or the naive, those who have not yet been instructed. This is something that needs to be instructed. It's given to impart knowledge and discretion to the young. To increase the wisdom of the wise, provide guidance for those who understand, better understand wise sayings and questions, riddles. And to get started at the right point of reference, which is to fear the Lord. That's I'm just kind of restating them in like bullet point fashion. But let's look at how Paul House, in his book Old Testament Theology, how he summarizes the passage. He does it like this. He says, readers are to gain certain skills from the book. They are to be informed about how to know wisdom, sound teaching, and words that give insight. They will discover how to make sound decisions and how to be just and right and fair. Growth will occur at every level of reader, whether young or simple or old and wise. Their teachers will be the wise of the past. These benefits can only accrue, however, when one begins by respecting the Lord, the one God who is the source of wisdom. Yahweh both defines and provides wisdom for the seeker. Now, that's a basic introduction of what these Proverbs, what this collection of wise sayings is there for. Now we're going to move to look at the book of Proverbs in terms of the value of wisdom. And this is the second division, which covers almost all of chapter 1 through chapter 9. And in this section, there are two instructors that appear. One is a father who speaks to his son, communicating wisdom and the importance of wisdom to his son, urging upon his wisdom to get this is critical for you. Life and death are at stake. So one of the instructors is a father who speaks to his son. The other is wisdom personified, who is like a woman who cries out in the streets, come, come and get wisdom. I'm here. I'm crying out to all of you who within the sound of my voice, don't follow the path of death. Here, come and drink, in a sense you could say, I'm using a metaphor here, but come and drink of the pool of wisdom and get it. And so there, and especially you who are inexperienced, you who are naive, you are simple, come, don't be fools any longer. So wisdom cries out like that. And this is the, you know, basically chapters 1 to 9. Now we're going to look a little bit at what they say. In chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, just to give you a flavor of what the father says to his son, You read this: "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." Now, what does that sound? What's a garland for your head? Just, you know, it's like, you know, you can, I can imagine. I'm just thinking this to me is almost expressing like we're watching the Olympics a little at our house. You get gold medals. Well, they don't. And they used to, you know, give you like these green things up for your head. It's like this is a medal for good living. This will grace you. And these teachings are important to make you successful in life. What really success, real success is. So the father then goes on to warn his son of sinners who would entice him because of their greed. They are swift to do evil, and the evil will come back on them. Do not follow along with them. So, but that's the father instructing his son just initially about the importance of getting wisdom. And then right away in chapter 1, wisdom then cries aloud in the street. We see in verses 20 to 23 how wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the market, she raises her voice. At the end of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates, she speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long, scoffers, will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. So, if you will just turn and listen, I'm waiting to be poured into your heart and into your life. Then verses 29 to 33 of chapter 1. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despise all my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. So this is, and you know, we're looking at this, really, this is God's provision of wisdom. He has, you know, provided it through this image of a father saying it to his son, get it? Now he's doing it as a woman who is crying out for anybody who will hear. And these verses just kind of underscore the dangers and the ultimate doom that awaits those who refuse to hear the cry of wisdom. And basically, and this is what we could see is, look what this is the course of the world, is it not? In terms of true wisdom, they hate knowledge and do not choose the fear of the Lord. Go to Romans chapter 1, and we have this reiterated where people exchange the glory of God for images and of the creation, and they worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator. And so basically wisdom is saying, you know, when you despise the reproof of wisdom, then you are basically turning away from the fear of the Lord. And what will happen is you will eat the fruit of your way. You live this way, it's going to produce a fruit, and that's what you're going to eat. And the fruit, this is the fruit of non-wisdom. This is the fruit of rejecting wisdom. And so, so even the simple are killed by their turning away. Now, the simple is the uninstructed. There are people who, the idea of the simple person is it's the person who just arrived on the scene. And they need to be taught. It's kind of like a new Christian. You need to, you know, discipling new Christians. And but they've come on the scene and they need the information that's going to help them wind their way through the world. And if they don't have that information, it's going to cost them big time. So there is a call that goes out to hear. And if they would just listen, they would be so protected. But the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But if people would just listen, the results would be so completely different. They would dwell secure, be at ease, without dread of disaster. Now, so wisdom warns of the consequences of remaining naive and scoffing at her. She is there, but she is refused. All one needs to do is listen and receive. Now, those who receive what wisdom offers will experience peace and security. They will not have to fear. So then, oh, I must have a blank there, okay? So Somebody give the little twinkle bell jingle so I'll know when to turn the page. Okay. The father continues then to urge his son in chapters 2 through 7. So you have this in chapter 1, you got, you know, the father speaks, wisdom speaks, and then you've got this extended portion of the father speaking again before wisdom speaks again. So let's look at what the father says to his son in chapter 2, verses 1 to 8. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it like hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He's a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. So this father is just showing his son how ready God is to impart wisdom. And also how he should seek it. How should he seek wisdom? How should we all seek wisdom? Like silver and gold. You know, we live in a world where, well, I'm not so sure everybody's seeking it. Like they just want to get by, and there's a lot of people who aren't seeking. But a lot of people, though, on the other hand, are in pursuit of a better life, which is, in their understanding, I have more to spend and more to play with and more free time. And they pursue that with, like, that's what life's all about. It's because of that it could be said here by the father to the son that he should seek wisdom like people seek silver and gold. That means it is valuable. And we ought to seek it like it has value. And just the promise that comes in this passage here is God is so, so ready, willing, and desiring to give it to you. All you've got to do is want it and seek it, and you'll have it. And he himself is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. Now in chapter 3, verses 1 to 4, I'm picking up some of these things because as you flip through the pages and the chapters there, it's just like it's recurring how this father's saying again and again to his son, my son, and your father's talking to you. So let's see where he says this in chapter 3, 1 through 4. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments for length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart so you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. So wisdom is critical in just dealing with the circumstances of the world, both directly with God as well as other people. So then as we move through those chapters, coming to chapters 8 and 9, we come back to wisdom speaking intently again. And in chapter 8, verses 6 through 11, wisdom says here, for I will speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right. For my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. Now, this is wisdom speaking. So wisdom is telling what it does. Wisdom speaks noble things. What is right is consonant with wisdom. My mouth will utter truth. So wisdom is truthful. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. So there is wickedness and wisdom are at odds. All the words of my mouth, the mouth of wisdom, are righteous. There's nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straight to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. Take my instruction instead of silver and knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than jewels. And all that you may desire cannot compare with her. So wisdom is pointing out also how precious it is, how precious wisdom is to those who have her. In verses 18 to 21 of chapter 8, wisdom is continuing to lift up her voice, says, riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness and the path of justice, granting an inheritance to those who love me and filling their treasuries. And continuing verses 22 to 24, the Lord possessed me. Now this is an interesting shift that we might go into outside of the notes at the end if we have time, but it's interesting that wisdom, when she's talking about herself as wisdom, says that when the Lord began his work of creation, I was there. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth, when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no springs abounding with water. That is to say, so wisdom was a part of the work of creation. In chapter 8, verses 27 to 31, it says, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned the limit to sea, assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him, like a master workman. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the children of man. Now, I'm just going to ask you, what does that sound like to you? Or who? Well, yes, you could say that. There's certainly the Spirit of God was over the deep, but I think more specifically, Jesus Christ, who, when we look in the New Testament, creation is actually ascribed to him. And then John chapter 1, where you've got, in the beginning was the Word, the Word was with God, the Word was God. And so that seems to be a more full pointing to Christ. And so you can see how this, this has got to be pointing to Jesus. And yet, it is about wisdom as well. But wisdom as like a little picture that casts a great light on the person of Christ. But we'll come back. We might come back to that. But we're going to try to keep right the message of the book in its particular context. So wisdom lifts up her voice in chapters 8 and 9, grounding her statements upon the fear of the Lord, just as the Father speaking to the Son did. She promises great benefits for pursuing truth. Wisdom was used by God to create the world and is thus commended to the sons of men to keep her ways and be blessed. If God created with wisdom, then why should we not live with wisdom? So, that's the introduction to the book. Now we're going to turn our attention to the section that's chapters 10 to 31. And as you might well know from your reading of Proverbs, there's a lot of stuff. We're not going to cover all that because we're asking, what is the message of the book? What is Proverbs? What's the message of this book? If we could put it into a nutshell, if like backing way off, like Google Earth, you're backing way up and just say, what do we see glimmering out of the book of Proverbs? So we're going to cover some of the things that are talked about in this third section, but we're still trying to arrive at the end. And what is the message of the book? So let's. There's one important thing I want to say from the beginning, and that is that the heart of the book of Proverbs, the person of God is at the heart. I mean, yes, this is about practical, daily, kind of like everyday living kind of wisdom. But guess what? There's not a point in being alive where God is not at the center of what it is to live with wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So here, the person of God is at the heart of Proverbs. He is the creator. The attention in this book is drawn back to his creating work by saying wisdom was with him when he created, when he did what he did. He is the creator who employed wisdom in the work of creation. And this is going back to a section that I don't think we covered already, just to use another reference in the previous section, but just to want to just really drive home this point that God is at the heart of Proverbs. In chapter 3, verse 19, the Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew. So the first thing I want to say about God at the center is he's the creator who employed wisdom in the work of creation. The second thing is that he is the giver of wisdom. When you look at Proverbs, that's where do you get wisdom from? You get it from God. He is the one who gives it. Chapter 2, verses 6 to 7 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright." Not only that, but Proverbs depicts God and presents him as a disciplinarian and a judge. There's some verses you can look up at a later time to verify that. He's also worthy of faith. For example, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Anybody know that? Usually that's some people's favorite verses out of Proverbs.
"Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path."
Okay, yeah. See, that verse right there is an exhortation to trust God, which insinuates he's worthy of faith. And there's other such verses making a similar point. God is creator. God's the giver of wisdom. He's a disciplinarian and judge. He is worthy of faith. And also, he protects the poor. There are several verses there which you see what it says. What does Proverbs tell us about God? It says that he has a heart for the downtrodden and for those who are poor. Not only that, but he also redeems the faithful. There's some verses that underscore that. And he rules over all. He is sovereign. Some poignant statements about the sovereignty of God and the degree of his sovereignty are in Proverbs. So much so that to the point of when you throw the dice or the lot is cast into the lap, it's every decision is from the Lord. So God is at the center. God is at the heart of the book of Proverbs. That's the first point I want to make. Even though it's wisdom, concerned with wisdom in the course of everyday life, it's inextricably linked to the person and work of God. Because wisdom begins with fearing him and is guided by him all along the way. All right, now, so we're going to focus for the rest of our time on six areas in which Proverbs instructs us toward godly success and wisdom in everyday life. One of the things that runs through these chapters is teaching on the fool. Mark Dever writes, "Part of learning what wisdom looks like is learning to recognize wisdom's opposite." And that's what Proverbs holds up. Here's the wise man, and here's the fool. And so the fool is the opposite of the wise man. So let's look at some things that we see in Proverbs about the fool, characteristics of the fool. For one thing, the fool, person who is a fool, dislikes discipline and despises correction. Doesn't want to be told what to do, wants to do whatever he wants to do, rejects those who would counsel wisdom to him. So Proverbs 3, verse 11. The father was speaking to his son, says, "Do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof." That is how you get wisdom. You learn as God works in your life, disciplining you and reproving you, particularly for us through the scripture. Proverbs 5, 8 and then 11 through 13 says this, "Keep your way far from her," that's the adulterous woman, "keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house. And at the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed. And you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors." So here's the father telling his son, you don't want to be this way. But the people who turn out that way at the end, when they've wrecked their lives, here's the explanation for why it was all wrecked. Because they hated discipline and despised reproof. Proverbs 12:1 says, "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge." You just stop right there. Love to be trained. Love to be instructed. Whoever wants the wisdom of God, if you love discipline, you love knowledge, because that's how you get it. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. But he who hates reproof is stupid. At least that's what the ESV says. So, let's play that word up when I find it somewhere I can say it. Proverbs 17:10 says, a rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Do you get that? Just if you speak a word, that proverb is saying, if you speak a word to a person, a man of understanding, which that's the person who's walking the way of wisdom, they take the rebuke seriously. They think through it. They don't just write it off because somebody's telling me what to do and how to live and all this and I don't want it. But they think through it. And that, just to speak a rebuke, has more positive impact in the life of a person of understanding than if you hit a fool 100 times. And just think about that. It's not just the depiction is like, okay, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, learned anything yet? But it's like the picture of one who is receiving the blows of life. Like discipline that God brings upon the life of a fool. Well, it's like they don't like their circumstances and their situation, but the very life they're living is bringing these blows upon them, and they keep complaining about the blows, but they're never at a point where they say, you know, I guess there's a reason for these blows, and if I would stop living like that or doing that, I'd stop being hit by those circumstances or by those consequences of my life behavior. That's the picture of a fool. They don't learn. They stare truth in the face and reject it. That's like what even the Psalms. The fool says in his heart, there's no God. They know it to be true deep within, but they reject it because they hate the idea so much. Okay. So, fools also expose their folly by their words. In other words, when they open their mouths, they remove all doubt. Proverbs 13:16, in everything the prudent acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly. In other words, you know, they're not even ashamed. The fool is so foolish that they're happy to let everybody know that they're a fool by what they say. They flaunt it and put it in your face. Proverbs 15:2 says, the tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. In other words, the tongue of the wise commends knowledge. The wise, when they talk, it's good for other people to listen. They're going to learn. But when the fool starts talking, it's folly that they're going to be pouring out, because that's what they do. Proverbs 17:27-28, whoever restrains his words has knowledge. Now let's stop right there, because it's so easy, right? Proverbs, there's these little pithy remarks. There's truth here, truth here, truth here. If you read those three or four things linked together, pretty soon you've missed everything because they're so packed. So whoever restrains his words has knowledge. What is that saying? Yeah, isn't this amazing how so much of the rest of the Bible just comes and this is echoing? This is like another one of those things where the principles of the Scripture are just boom, 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 everywhere. So it's like, yeah, think before you speak. Be slow to speak. Whoever restrains his words is smart, wise, has knowledge. And he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. What's a cool spirit? The opposite of a hot spirit. So a hot spirit, you know, gets mad and speaks out of that anger. A cool spirit is one who says, let me think about this for a minute. So this reflecting, restraining your words and having a cool spirit, similar thing. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. So that's one thing about a fool. If they would just be quiet, you know, but the thing is, so when he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. That statement in and of itself is saying that, you know, But fools don't do that. But if they, for just the 1 second that they do, they appear not to be as foolish as they are in their hearts. Now, that's the fool. Another person that we come into contact with in the book of Proverbs is the sluggard. And I know this is a generation of workaholism, but I think that probably all humans struggle some with this. Especially when you look at what we really do with our time. So, the sluggard, one thing we know from Proverbs about the person who's called the sluggard is they love to sleep. For example, Proverbs 6, 9 through 11. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. That's a powerful image. Poverty will come upon you like a robber, and like somebody has a gun to take your stuff away from you. It's like it's violent in the way it pulls from you, how it comes upon you with poverty. But this is also, by the way, almost verbatim what is in chapter 24, verses 33 to 34. And you know, if it's in the Bible twice, we really ought to pay attention. So the sluggard loves to sleep. Also chapter 10, verse 5 says, he who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. Slothfulness, chapter 19, verse 15. Slothfulness casts into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Chapter 26, verse 14. As the door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. So what turns and goes nowhere, or what constantly rolls, what goes round and round? It's like you could say a door on its hinges, and a person in the bed who is a sluggard. They turn over and go back to sleep. The sluggard also fails to finish what he starts. This is some real practical stuff. You ever feel like you don't finish what you start? Maybe it'd be good to have some wisdom of Proverbs put into our lives here. Chapter 26, verse 15 says that the sluggard buries his hand in the dish. It wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. Isn't that a powerful picture? He's eaten. He's not gotten a fork or anything because he's too lazy to get the fork. Well, and you know it. Maybe they didn't have forks and spoons, but they're using their hands. And oh, well, that hand back in there. Well, I'm just not even going to bother to pull it out. I'm just going back to sleep because it's too much trouble to pull my hand out of the cup, out of the dish. And another thing about the sluggard is one excuse is as good as another. In other words, why don't you? Well, here's one thing that the sluggard would say. Proverbs 22, verse 13. The sluggard said, there's a lion outside. I might be killed in the streets. I'm not going out there. I'm not going to work, whatever. You know, I'm just, the whole idea is there's somebody just lazy, not redeeming the time. This is very opposite of what the scriptures teach in terms of the time being short. Our days are not many, and there's a lot to do. And, well, if you're a sluggard, it doesn't, an excuse, whatever excuse you can find, you can use. And you'll do that. That's what sluggards do. Now, I want to say something about the Proverbs and their instruction on the family. So we've seen Proverbs on the fool, on the sluggard. It's also really central to the Proverbs, the family is. The wise and godly life presented in Proverbs is expressed in the context of family. This book is largely cast as a father teaching his son, as we've seen, and is punctuated by warnings against adultery, which is the destruction and defiance of marriage, and concludes with, you know, the very last chapter of Proverbs is the godly wife in Proverbs 31. So family is, this just, the heartbeat of Proverbs beats family. Which is to say, it's an important God-ordained part of life. And looking at the family specifically, there's wisdom for husband and wife. In chapter 5, verses 15 to 20. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? So there's wisdom right there for husband and wife. And there's some more here in chapter 31, verses 10 to 12. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. There's a prescription for how to be a godly woman, but it's also a description of what a godly woman is. A godly wife. Chapter 31, verses 26 to 27. She opens her mouth with wisdom, And the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She is not a sluggard. Okay, and so this right here in chapter 31, verses 26 and 27 points out that she teaches. She teaches her children. She pours wisdom into their hearts. So this is, you know, part of a model of not only the husband or the father that's depicted in Proverbs saying to his son that he should seek wisdom, but here's the mother also portrayed as being one that speaks with wisdom. And so if her children hear her speak wisdom and they learn from that, and part of her wisdom is the teaching of kindness on her tongue. So there's also wisdom for parents, as parents. Now, this is not an advocation. Oh, I hope you know that I'm not an advocate of child abuse. I don't consider spanking to be child abuse so long as it is done with wisdom and care. This is and the right that these proverbs were not advocating harming children. But there, nevertheless, strong words are used, of course, for this. Proverbs 19:18, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. What is that insinuating? There is hope if you discipline. But if you don't, then it's the same as setting your heart on putting your child to death. Because you will let them persist in this kind of behavior, in this kind of mindset, in this kind of rejection of authority. Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child. When a fool speaks, what comes out? Folly. Folly is bound up in the heart of the child. But the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Proverbs 23:13-14, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with a rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. What does our society, basically the elites in our society, seem to advocate? They go, what?
Time
outs. Well, yeah, but even if you do a timeout, it's really, I think, in a large part, the elites, you know, just don't get in the way of children. You're going to stifle their creativity. Blah, blah, blah. Let the child alone. Leave the child to himself. Let him figure these things out. What? You know? Yeah, this is completely anti-Bible, these ideas of that children will flourish if you just get out of their way. Because if you discipline, you know, you're going to create problems. It's just some of the most clear standing in opposition to the instruction of the Bible that there is. There's other examples, but this is one of them. So there's wisdom for parents there. But there's also wisdom for children. What should children do in respect to their parents and their families? Well, Proverbs 4:1-4. Hear, O sons, the father's instruction. Be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast to my words. Keep my commandments and live. And then that's what this father is doing to his child. So this is the wisdom of a father, but it's also wisdom for children to take seriously their parents' instruction. Proverbs 13:1, a wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Proverbs 15:5 says, a fool despises his father's instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is prudent. So there's wisdom for children in the family. Now, there's also stuff about friendship. So we're moving through these six things. A friendship in Proverbs. There are bad friends, and we need to beware of them. Not disassociate ourselves from sinners is not what this is saying. If you want to be able to share the gospel you've got and you're going to be out in the world, you're having associations. But a friend is someone who is somebody you give permission to have an impact on your life. So there are people that shouldn't have that position in your life. Proverbs 28:7, the one who keeps the law is a son with understanding, but a companion of gluttons shames his father. Proverbs 29:3, he who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but a companion of prostitutes squanders his wealth. There's Proverbs 24:1-2. Be not envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their hearts devise violence and their lips talk of trouble. What's the insinuation in not desiring to be with these people? If you want to be with them, then what will you be? Like them. Yeah, exactly. Like them. Now, on the other hand, they're good friends. And Proverbs 13:20 talks about this when it says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise. Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Now, what does that mean? Wounds, hurts, pains, right? That's when a friend is willing, who loves you enough to speak to you in a way that maybe it stings a little bit, but their purpose and their reason is Matthew 5. It's to help you out. And it is good that we listen to friends who speak to us in this way. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. I mean, we'd rather be, in a sense, the kisses are much more to be preferred than wounds, right? Shows of affection versus wounds. But the thing is, it's insinuated here, the kisses of an enemy are a sham. The wounds of a friend are real and precious. Now, in Proverbs 27:9, oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. And in Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. You know the friends that stick with you and help carry you through and are there when your world's crumbling, and they wrap their arms around you, they pray for you, and then they wound you, maybe. But those are the friends that are good friends. Also, big topic that runs through these chapters of Proverbs are the words we speak. More than I could even think about putting down for us to look at here tonight. But chapter 10, verse 11 says, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. You ever think about the words you say being something, things that have the potential to give life, if you give the right words, if you're wise, if you're righteous, which that goes back to walking in the way of wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and the fear of God. That is the mouth of the righteous in Proverbs. That is a fountain of life to those that they speak to. Out of that being the root of the fountain of the source. Then Proverbs 10:13a, on the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found. 10 verse 14 says, the wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. So you speak like a fool, you know, we've talked about them already. So then verses 18 to 21 of chapter 10 say this, the one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slander is a fool. When words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for a lack of sense. So that's about words, both good and bad. The words of the fool as well as the words of the righteous. The warning against the one and the encouraging of the other. Some more on words. Chapter 10, verse 32. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. Chapter 12, verse 6, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them. Chapter 13, verse 3, whoever guards his mouth preserves his life, and he who opens his wide his lips comes to ruin. Chapter 15:28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. And so James says, be slow, be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Now, another thing, life and death. And this is a big thing in Proverbs. There are two ways. I'm going to jump into these verses. Our time is getting a little close here. Chapter 14, verse 12, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. That's a big one. There is a way, and those, 16:25 and 14:12, basically the same verse. Again, it's in there twice. There is a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way to death. Chapter 10, verse 2, treasures gained by wickedness do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. What delivers from death? Righteousness, not treasures. This is just, this is people in our world and our temptations that we face. We're all trying to get more, right? This is the drive that we have to know and see in wisdom. It's not about getting more treasures. That does not profit, but it is about emulating Christ more and more. Chapter 11, verse 4, riches do not profit in the way in the day of wrath. This is a day of wrath, the day of the visitation of God. Could be, you know, a day when He visits you here and now, but it's certainly the day of judgment when He visits. Riches, can you imagine? Well, you know, John Piper has told this story of spending time, not living for retirement, so he's not looking for a day when he's going to go off and live on the Florida coast and get all these shells together so that when he stands before God, he can say, look at all these shells. And he said, you know, we're living for more than that. So here, it's like riches do not profit in the day of wrath. He said, so much. You could say, God, look at my 401k. Okay. They do not profit in the day of wrath because what do you need? The righteousness of Christ. Righteousness delivers from death. There is the gospel in one verse right there. Proverbs 12:28. In the path of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. Proverbs 13:14. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, that one may turn away from the snares of death. He has life and death set against each other. Proverbs 14:27, the fear of the Lord is the fountain of life, that one may turn away from the snares of death. Proverbs 14:32, the wicked is overthrown through his evil doing, but the righteous find refuge in his death. So, Proverbs, like Psalm 1 then, paints two ways. One way is the way that leads to life, and the other way is the one that leads to death. Proverbs points to the reality of judgment, which we've seen already, the day of wrath, wherein what is needed for that day is righteousness. The righteous finds refuge. So where does the wisdom come from that puts one on the path that leads to life? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So the problem is, no one can say I am, and the problem is no one can say I'm clean and without sin. That's Proverbs 20, verse 9. Nobody can say I'm not a sinner. So even Proverbs itself admits, you know, all people are sinners. And so they need something for this day, the day of wrath. So what shall we do? Proverbs teaches us that we must confess our sins. Proverbs 28:13 says, he who conceals his sins does not prosper, but whoever confesses and renounces them finds mercy. So does he who confesses then find a reward? No, he finds mercy. But if God promises to repay every person according to what he has done, Proverbs 24:12, how can anyone find mercy? Well, Proverbs does not provide as full an answer to that question as the New Testament does, but it does provide the general outline of an answer. According to chapter 16, verse 6, through love and faithfulness, sin is atoned for. The love and faithfulness of Jesus. Now, the message of the book of Proverbs is that God offers wisdom for everything. This is putting it all in a capsule. What's the message of this book? So we looked at all these ways in which everyday living is touched upon, but also righteousness, and also wisdom versus folly. And God is at the heart of it all. So the message of the book of Proverbs is that God offers wisdom for everyday living, and the life of everyday living though, is also the life of eternal living. In other words, that should be yes right there. In other words, everyday living is not mundane. You know, you look at life. Well, you get up and work, right? Or do your thing. You get up and then you do your thing in the day, you go home, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And everybody's looking forward to the weekend. And then the weekend's over like that, and it's time to go back to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And sometimes it may seem, I think this is part of what Proverbs is saying. Everyday life may seem sometimes just dull and boring. That is folly. What Proverbs is saying, it is meaningful in that you live wisely and show forth the fear of God, living in the instruction of God. So the wisdom with which the wise faces the circumstances of everyday life, is the same as that with which we face the paramount questions of life and death. It begins with the fear of God. This wisdom acknowledges that we are sinners, but it rejects the way of foolishness and death and trusts God for atonement, trusts God for His provision of Christ for our forgiveness. It trusts the Lord and lives according to His wisdom. That, I think, is the message of the book. I think the message of the book is, if you want to even sober down, everyday living is eternal life living. In other words, the glory of God is at stake in the everyday things. Wisdom is drinking deeply of what God's instruction is and living in faith in Him. And so, another book that it's pointing us to Christ. It's pointing us to our sin need, the need for atonement and the need for forgiveness and the need of walking in submission to Christ. Let's pray. Our Father and our God, thank You so much for giving us such practical instruction about the words that we use. Just the matter of giving thought before we speak. But reminding us that it all begins with whether or not we bend the knee before You, reverence, worship. So help us to order our days, to order our lives, not to be fools, not to be sluggards, to be people of urgency, a people who redeem the time in what seems perhaps many times, Lord, to be very mundane and normal and regular. Help us in the regular times that the ordinary times, to realize they're actually very extraordinary in that each one holds an opportunity for us to glorify and honor You. And help us do that to the praise and honor and glory of who You are. And we ask it in the precious name of Christ Jesus, who is our advocate, our Savior, and in whom we put our faith. Amen.